Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
This podcast is the result of my passion for languages and for talking to people. I have conversations with language professionals who are willing to share their experience. We focus on their work, but also on how their love for languages has shaped their personal lives. I'm Rita Prazeres Gonçalves, and I provide language services such as translation, localization, voiceover, and others in English and in Portuguese. I am also a language mentor for Portuguese speakers who are learning English and English speakers who are learning Portuguese. I am the language worker. Get in touch if you would like to know more about how I can help you with your projects. My email is rita@thelanguageworker.com. This podcast is also available as a videocast on YouTube. Hi, everybody. So today I have Fabrizio, right? He will help me with all the pronunciations. I don't know his last name, but no, I would not risk this one. So
No worries.
I'll leave it to him. But he seems to have a very interesting job, and he seems to, just like me, have gravitated towards both language work and then other facets of our language industry. And that is really interesting to me, of course. So we'll discuss that in detail. But first, let's just know how you pronounce Fabrizio's name, like name and last name. And then just wondering what the story was, because I saw that you studied languages and cultures and literatures. And the first question is, so when you approached your BA, what was the idea? Was it the languages? Was it the cultures? Or was it the literatures? So good morning, Fabrizio, and thank you so much for being here.
Good morning to you. So my surname is Valgoy. Mm-hmm. Quite weird. There are not many Valgoys in Italy. Mm-hmm. That is from the very north of Italy, at the border with Switzerland. There's a very small community with this surname. And that I know that there are a lot of Valgoys in Argentina then.
Ah.
Probably the immigrants from Italy, mm-hmm, to Argentina, right, moved there. Oh yeah, so it's Valgoy. So I would say my background with languages started in high school, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I was really not good in high school. I didn't like studying or anything. I was not good at all. So we have this like scoring system in Italy. It goes from 1 to 10. Mm-hmm. 1 is the worst and 10 is the best. And I was always around 5, 6, I would say. Maybe 7 if it was a good day. But then it was when, you know, Netflix and all of those streaming platforms like popped up.
Mm-hmm.
And I really got into them. I was every day watching content in English, in Spanish, because I was also studying Spanish. And that's where I really fell in love with languages.
Mm-hmm.
I also got into music at the same time. And then, yeah, when it came to study at university, I was like, what am I going to do? I feel like English is the only subject I'm good at, languages in general. So I was like, okay, let's enroll and do languages, but also literatures. Because in high school, it was actually like a high school based on humanities. I was doing, mm-hmm, a lot of literature, Latin, philosophy. So I was like, yeah, let's do that. So I enrolled in my BA. Loved the language part, hated the literature part, so it was not really a great idea. But yeah, that's where I really understood I was good at languages, and that's what I then pursued in life. Then I finished my BA, I enrolled in my MA, again, mm-hmm, in languages and literature, because I kind of had to like go on with the same path. And then, yeah, that's it. I did my first internship during my MA in Spain, in a very small LSP, because, mm-hmm, I knew that I wanted to work with languages. I actually studied there as a translator from, mm-hmm, Spanish to Italian, and then I moved on as a project management intern.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I really understood I was good at project management. So I was like, let's do this in life, because I really like it. I really like it.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, an internship in project management. Now, that's something, yeah, special.
Yeah, it was kind of different, I would say. I mean, not everyone would do that as an internship,
Yeah, for sure.
but yes. And I just wanted
First, why
to.
did you go to Spain? Was it like a special program, or was it something that you've always wanted? Was it because you were studying Spanish, I guess, as one of your languages?
Yes, I studied English, Spanish, and French, but I wanted to go to Spain because I was really close to the culture. I had been there before and wanted to work there. I wanted to have an experience there. And it was amazing. I was in Granada, very small city, but very active in the south of Spain and Andalusia. I loved it. But yeah,
Very
maybe not
small, but
the.
there's very important things there.
Yes, yeah, the history, the culture, it was amazing. Loved it. It was during summer though, super hot. Not recommended during summer, but still beautiful. And I was just like, yeah, let's try this. Let's see how it goes, because I wanted
But
to be in the
why
language
project
industry.
management? So you went there as an intern for translation. I get that, right? Because
Yes.
you didn't really study translation, but then I guess
Yes.
it's one of the ways that you can interpret a BA in these subjects, right? But
Yes.
then while you were doing it, so something happened so that you actually did, was it like two internships or was it one
No, it
with
was
two
one.
parts?
The first one was only 2 months, but then they were looking for another intern in project management. And I was already there available. So it just happened. They proposed me. They were like, do you want to work in project management and see how it goes? I was like, yeah, let's do it. So it was.
And then how was the first impact from the, I always like this because it's like, how do you move from language work into
Yes.
project management, right? This is a
Yes.
subject that I really enjoy talking about
Yes.
because I always say that you have to have, if you do this at the same time, which you didn't, I suppose, right?
No, it was not at the same
It was
time.
not
I
at the
did
same
one
time.
first and then the other one. Yes.
Yeah. So then you have to wear two different, very different hats because it's just the mind frame has to be completely transformed in order to go from language work into project management. I'd say that I maybe people don't see it like that because it seems like for some people it's kind of a natural flow, progression, etc. But I would say for the majority of people, if you start doing language work and then you changed into project management, for the people that I know, they feel forced to move into project management. So it's
Oh.
not something that they wanted, but it's something that had to happen in order for them to further their career in that particular LSP. But since you hadn't been a freelancer before or anything, right? So you went straight
No.
into this internship. So what
Yeah.
happened there? So you they said, well, then now it's you. So how was the first approach to work? Because it's nothing to do with the previous one.
Yeah, so I'm just a very curious person by nature, and I just wanted to try it out. Because I was in the team with the project managers as well. And I was actually fascinated by what they were doing. Because it was a small LSP, I would say, but they had a lot of clients and they were working on a lot of different like subjects.
So when you say small, let's look at the number of project managers, for example, which is really how you can tell, I suppose.
It was small, it was five project managers. So I would say it was small. But they were doing translations, they were doing voiceover, they were doing interpreting. So it was actually quite varied. It was interesting for me because
So
it was
the
the first
agency
job.
didn't have, or the LSP didn't have a specific vertical or subject that they specialized in, and they took
No, it was kind of
multiple types
everything.
of.
Yes,
Wow.
everything that came in, they were like, okay, let's do it and let's see how it goes. Yeah, but they had very experienced people, so that's why they were able to do that.
Right. So then
Yeah.
you start the first day. You already know the people. You go to their desks and start, looking at what they're doing. And then how was it? Was like all of a sudden you're not doing this language work very intense, very focused
Yeah.
like that. And then it's something you have to be focused on other details, right?
Yes, it was.
Including the financial part, I guess.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, at first it was kind of hard because, of course, you have to learn how all the programs work, how the cut tool works, how to deal with the linguists, how to deal with the clients. It was a lot, I have to say. So I actually stayed there then for my internship for 4 months. And then I moved back to Italy. And I graduated, and then I started to work in another LSP as a junior in Italy. And that's where I actually learned everything that I know from project management. It's another LSP, a very small one. This one had, I think, 6 PM, so pretty much the same in Milan. Very high fashion clients, high-end clients, luxury fashion. And I was really interested in this topic. So that's where I was really like, okay, let's get into this. Let's learn everything. Let's perfection my processes, my strategies, my how to deal with clients, how to deal with linguists. And that's where I fell in love with the job, I would say.
It
It
totally makes
was.
sense that you do fashion work while in Milan.
Yes.
I
Yes, I'm
guess.
actually from Milan. My dad
Right.
is from the very north of Italy, but yeah, it really makes sense. Yeah, we had a lot of clients from Milan in high fashion, and yeah, I loved it.
So
It was.
can you throw a few names, since this was already in the past, like names, because of course you don't deal directly necessarily with those brands, but I always have like my couple of names that I throw sometimes when I talk about past clients.
Yes, I guess I can throw a couple of names. I would say Loro Piana, Cucinelli, Brunello Cucinelli, even Chanel, Moncler. These kind of clients are really high-end
Right.
clients, super demanding. So sometimes it was actually really hard to work with these clients. But I think that's when you learn and you also, I don't know, play with your things. You try to always push your limits and actually do a good thing. So I really loved it. So then I stayed there for a couple of years. My position evolved. I was first a junior, then I became a PM. And yeah, one day I realized that I wanted to do something abroad because I was tired of being in Italy. So then I had this
You're
really
tired
good.
of being in Italy.
Yeah, because I've always actually I traveled abroad. I've lived in different countries. I've lived in France, in Colombia.
Oh
I've
my God,
lived
you did.
in
Why did you live in
Spain. Yeah.
Colombia? When was that?
I studied there for a semester. It was yeah, during university, 6 months. It was this
Where were
overseas
you?
program
In
in Bogota.
Medellin
Bogota.
or? Oh, Bogota.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was in not for a long period, but I went there for it was my first international speaking gig, right? So it was
Oh.
a symposium on terminology, and it
Yes.
was in Cartagena de Indias. So I mean,
Lovely.
yes, that was really good. So I
Yes,
always
yeah.
feel very excited when people mention Colombia, of course.
Yes, I love it. I love the culture, I love the food, I love everything. Looking forward to go back, to be honest.
Yeah, it was hard to leave after 15 days. It was like, oh no. Because I really feel a lot of, connection with anything in the American continent, I
Yeah.
guess. But yeah, I guess because I always say that I'm a fake European person, right?
Okay.
When people said, oh, but you're European, I'm like, yeah, but I'm just a terrible example of it. I'm short, I'm dark, I'm like, no, I don't. I'm not
It's
sophisticated, I guess not.
fine.
No,
It's
I
fine.
do feel a lot better in the Americas, I have to say. I think it has a lot more to do with me. But so I understand when people feel that really strong connection and they were like, wow, this feels like home, because I guess that's the way it is for everyone, right? Super inviting and super warm
Yes.
in terms of the people, right? So
Yes.
that's I was there just for a short period in Cartagena, but was like, oh, I still talk about it all the time. And it was
Same.
over 20 years now.
Oh, let's go back together. It was lovely. And they had this
Let's.
amazing Italian community. It was lovely, lovely. So, yeah.
Very good.
Anyways,
So you wanted to
yeah,
move out of
I
Italy,
wanted to
but.
move out of Italy. And I had this great opportunity and I moved to Germany. So, right now I'm living in Germany and I am working for Puma, the sports tech company, as a localization manager. And I would say it's great. It was probably the best move for my career because I have worked as a linguist. I'm also currently a linguist still. I have worked in the agency side and now I'm working on the client side. So I've seen all of three sides.
I
And
know
I
what you
would say
mean.
this is the
Yes, I
best
know. I know where the best one
one.
is.
Yes. Yeah, but it was really interesting to see all of three aspects of the industry. Yes.
So what's
And
your I mean, when you heard that you were going to, so did you apply? Did you,
yes, I
what was the
applied.
story? So you applied
Yeah,
while
yeah.
you were still in Italy.
Yes. I did my interviews, the interviewing process and everything, and they got me. And so I moved immediately to Germany.
Yeah. But were you focused on going specifically to Germany, or were you looking to go somewhere else, or just, anywhere in Europe? So what was your story when you thought about just started branching
Yes,
out?
I was looking somewhere else, not specifically in Germany, but I knew that I wanted to work on the client side and not anymore on the LSP side. So yeah, it was not Germany. I was actually looking, yeah, all around Europe. I would say mainly the Netherlands or Denmark. I wanted to go up north, and then I ended up in Germany.
And then you're like, well, so did you have multiple options, or was it the first one that came up and you thought, oh my God, this is so good, I'm not going to wait for anything else? So what happened there?
No, I actually had three options, but I would say that Puma was the biggest name. So that's why I'm with here. That's great.
So you still do language work, like in which context?
So you mean at Puma or in my personal
I don't
life?
know. So is it
So
present in multiple places or just at Puma, or what's the story? Are you still like doing freelance work at the same time, or are you working in language work within the company? Because you say you are a translation manager, right? You don't say at your current title, at least what you write is not project manager, is translation manager. So why do you call yourself translation manager?
yes, so I would say in my personal life, I am a freelancer. I work with three clients, I would say mainly, and I do translations for them from English to Italian. It's mainly something that I do during the weekend because, of course, I don't have a lot of time during the weekdays, I would say. While at Puma, so at first, I actually started out as a copy and translation manager. So I was responsible for copy and translation management for Puma Europe. Our source language is English, and then we had six target languages plus some very small other languages, European languages for different topics like retail and stuff like that. And then the position kind of evolved, and now I am a localization manager because it got bigger and better. And now I also deal with, of course, more things, but I also deal with like the improvement of our current tools. I deal with our strategy, internal strategy in terms of localization. And I cannot, of course, like disclose
Of
everything
course,
we
I
do.
know, I know.
Yeah, but it's more
Of course.
about the dynamic role, and I have much many more responsibilities compared to when I started. Yeah, so it's
So,
actually quite interesting. I love it.
I can imagine.
Yes.
So, when you have your other clients, is it in the same arena or is it totally different subjects and you're still, tackling a lot of other types of content, or are you focusing on? Because I don't really know what the focus is necessarily, because I mean, I know it's sports apparel, right? But I'm sure you
Yes.
have a lot of other things going on at the same time, have to do with, I don't know, artists or sports people who represent the brand and all of that. So that's a bit of a different kind of subject. So in your private work, is it the same type of arena? Let's use this word. Or is it something completely different?
So at Puma, yes, it's sports style, it's marketing, it's also legal, it's many different things. In my personal life, I am specialized in fashion due to my
All
experience. Yeah.
right.
And I'm also specializing right now in UX because I can see where the industry is kind of going. So it's something that I think is good to be specialized in right now. But mainly fashion. Yeah, for my clients, I translate from Italian to English for fashion.
So it kind of merges the fashion part of things, right?
Yes. Correct. Yeah, I would say like Puma is actually more, it's not high fashion, it's more sports style, so it's a bit more chill, I would say. For other clients, it's a bit more technical, and also the language is a little bit more high end. So of course there's a difference, but yeah, I would say everything is under the same like topic
Yeah,
domain.
because the clients for Pima are start when they are babies, I guess, and then they you have to appeal
Yes.
to the masses, I suppose, no?
Yes,
Compared
yes.
to the high fashion clients that have very specific public, I suppose.
Yes, correct.
So how was the first approach to, I mean, I remember when I worked at Google and worked at Apple and all of those places. So when you get somewhere with a big name like that, how was the first impact? Is like a building with the big name outside, like you have for Google, or is it more
Yeah, it's kind of the same, I would
discreet, or is
say.
it
No, it's definitely not discreet. You have these huge Puma signs everywhere, but it's actually very appealing. I remember I got there on the first day. I was so scared because I used to work all in very small places, as I told you, in very small LSPs with, I would say, 15, 20 employees. And then you move to Puma, which is like huge, and you have all of these people, all of these things to do. But I think I dealt with that kind of well, I would say. I was super excited. I wanted to make a good impression, and that's what I did, I think, hopefully. But yeah, it was scary. And I would say, since the focus of Puma is, of course, not on localization, it was really hard to make management understand what, first of all, what localization is, because they didn't even know, and then how to add localization to our current strategy. Because I think that in these huge companies, localization is not, of course, a priority. And when you have to localize something, it's always the very last step. And that's a really huge mistake that everyone does. No one considers localization as something important, as something that really drives sales and revenue. So when you're there and you have to propose your strategy, you are always judged by like external things, like how fast you are, how good the quality is, how much money you save when you work with a specific LSP. So it's really hard to get into this place because also they didn't have anything before I started. Everything was run by copywriters. They were also dealing with the localization part. I got there and it was completely different. I had to build everything from scratch, and it was a very huge challenge for me. Of course, now the situation is better after 1 year and a half, but it was really hard, especially at the beginning. Yes.
Yeah, sounds
Yes.
challenging. So,
Yes.
what's the story? Do you these days? And when you started working in the localization part of it, so what happens? Do you work with, I mean, do you send out projects? Do you send out projects to your team? Do you deal with the people who are creating the original content? Is the original content, which I've heard in the industry, not talking necessarily about your, I mean, this is more of your view on the world because we're not going to talk about the brand necessarily because we don't need it. We don't need to talk about the brand because I guess it's the same. It's like a common thing everywhere. So, do you feel like the original materials, and I suppose you've been working on that side too, are ready for localization afterwards, or is that immediately where the problems start?
I would say it's also where the problems start because it's really hard for companies to realize that they don't have only one target, like audience, but they actually have many target audiences. They're different from country to country, they're different in terms of age, in terms of locations, many, many different factors. So when you create the target copy, in our case, it's in English, it's not ready for every other country that we deal with. So that's where the problem actually starts. And then, of course, you cannot deal with translation, like basic translation, because it wouldn't work. Like the thing that works for English doesn't work for Spanish, doesn't work for Portuguese, doesn't work for Italian. So you always have to adapt your content. But we also have many, many rules, at least in my company. So you cannot actually have this freedom and create something completely different from the source. So it's really, really challenging every time. We are working on it, but yeah, it's really, really challenging, especially because you also work with a lot of people, both when you create the target, and then when you create the source, files. It's super, super challenging, and it's a problem that many, many companies have, I feel like.
So what happens with the localized content? Do you send it out? Do you have internal teams, or is it like a mixture? Like at Apple, what they did at the time was to have like a core group of people who were employees at Apple. I suppose it's still the same. And then you had, depending on the language, a different number of people, right, involved in the localization department. And then the bulk of the work would have to be outsourced because, of course, it's humongous
Yes.
numbers of words. So do you work in the same way, or do you have everything done internally? I guess not, right?
No, it's kind of the same. We have a few internal people for specific languages, and then the rest just goes out. And we deal either with LSPs or freelancers. It's depends on the content and what we want to do internally. But
Mm.
yeah, I would say it's impossible to do everything inside. Even if you try, you need to have a lot of resources. It's kind of impossible nowadays. So it's better to send everything outside. But also, when you send something outside, it's kind of hard to have the control over what other people do. So it's another challenge that you face every single day. And maybe you get your content back, it's not what you wanted, but then you don't have time to like actually correct this content. Because also e-commerce is a very fast-paced environment,
Yes.
so everything needs to be ready like from one day to the other. So yeah, it's super challenging, but we're working with
Yes, I know how it goes, and I love it.
Yes. Some
Because
days, yes,
everybody
some
knows
other
that
days, no.
localization is my soft spot. So yeah, for sure. So without getting into too much detail, what would you
Yes.
say it's your internal organization in terms of the, I suppose you have one localization team, right? Because in at Apple, this was a long time ago, so I can talk about it, I guess, probably not even the same building or anything, but they kind of had
Yes.
a whole building that was dedicated to this, right? And everybody was working on the same project from different perspectives, but everybody was there. But there was like a manager, and then people, engineers, and then the translators themselves, and all of these people working together, which is amazing. Apple had an amazing environment. I suppose they still do. They're famous for what they do on the outside, but I guess at least at that time, I really enjoyed going there because I was working a lot of times from the headquarters and would go there for meetings. And so I have the impression that bigger companies have an even better environment, that they are very inviting and that things are very are organized in a more, sometimes more organic way, because they've had the time to mature and they also have the resources to implement in terms of the desks, in terms of, you know, the buildings that they have, how they are fit to people, right? And how people
Yes.
feel in them. So do you guys have like a whole big, huge building just for localization? Is it a lot of people working there? Do you have like internal, let's say you do localization management and then you have project managers? And I mean, like in a broad sense, how does that go in terms of department, if it's a
Well, I
department?
wish it was just like Apple, to be honest. So we're kind of new to localization, to be honest. So it's a rather small group. And now, of course, it's growing because we're learning a lot and trying to keep up with the competitors. But yeah, it's rather small, I would say. Yeah, I would say right now around 10 people, so it's not that much. But yeah, it will definitely grow in the future, hopefully. And yeah, just trying to every day better ourselves and come up with new strategies on how to deal with things better.
Are
So, yeah.
the majority of people, those 10 people, 12 people working with you, have this, do they have the same background? Do they come from the industry, or are they coming from other places and then they just gathered all there and now you're working together? Because I know a bunch of companies now that are gathering their internal team for translation or localization, depending on the case. And it seems like people that used to be in the industry, in the LSP side of things, are now being taken to other types of companies in order to form or to create from scratch. Usually, from what I see, a lot of my friends, especially from Transperfect, are now in other companies, other brands, big brands like Uber, places like that, where they actually have their own internal localization management team, not necessarily that they do localization there, but that they actually manage things from there. So is that way, or do you have people who come from other backgrounds?
No, it's kind of the same. We're actually lucky because we have people from the industry that actually understand what our company needs. But of course, then we work with a lot of people that come from other industries. We work a lot with content managers, we work with the CRM managers, paid social managers. So of course, they don't necessarily come from that background, of course. So it's also a challenge to make them understand what our needs are. And to like communicate effectively with in terms of every campaign that we create. But yeah, it's good to have my people coming from the industry who have the same struggles as me and they can help me make things better. That's really great.
So do you have like reference glossaries, things like that? Is this something that you create there, or do you outsource that kind of work? I have to ask because that's what I do. So, because I work mostly localization, right? So,
yes.
And I do work with a few brands, not apparel at the moment, but I have worked with a lot of companies in that domain. It's quite complicated, to be honest. I think it's one of the most challenging ones. Right now I have projects that are a bit more technical, and I would say that the challenges are different, but maybe not as scary as it is for apparel, because I mean, you do have a very specific relationship with objects, right? And with things that you wear. And I did something for one of those big brands some months ago, and it was about hats. And it's a disaster because in Portuguese compared to English, the number of words that you have that could refer to hats, it's very limited, right? And you had about 50 or 60, and I was like, wow, this is insane, right? So, I mean, I'm sure you face these types of problems. So within the six languages, do you have, I guess you don't even have Portuguese probably, do you?
No, it's not in our main six languages. I'm sorry.
I figured.
I'm sorry. No, we have German, French, Italian, Spanish, Dutch, and Polish.
Right.
As our main language.
Wow, you have Polish and you don't have Portuguese. Shall I start screaming? Yes. Anyway.
I'm sorry. It will be the next one, though.
There's a valid reason for that. But yeah, I understand that if you're building it, of course, you have to have figs. Obviously, I was expecting that, and because they travel so well, right?
Yes.
But still, I'm sure that there's a huge difference between the terminology that you need to talk about apparel in these different languages, right? Because it depends on what kind of weather you have in that country, what kind of, you know, relationship you have with sports, for example. So I have to think about all of these things. And so this is your daily exercise, I suppose, right? And that's for gloves, for shoes, for all of that, right? I find it fascinating. I've also done a glossary of things for brides, and it's also very specific, right? So I actually think that it's one of the most challenging industries in what comes to localization, exactly because of that. I mean, the factors that influence the terminology that you have for those objects is just insane, right?
Yes. So, and imagine when you have many, many people working on the same content every single day. It's
so how
impossible
do you
to keep track
kind
of everything.
Of keep some, let's say, some consistency? Do you update your materials constantly? Do you review them? Do you have someone who's specialized in terminology? Do you have a terminology team?
No, we don't have a terminology team.
Those exist in the world, trust me.
I know. Yeah, of course, we try to review everything to keep our glossaries up to date, to update our transition memories, term bases. But then, of course, it's really hard to have an eye on everything, especially when your word counts are really, really high and you have a lot of content coming in every single day. Yeah, we try to do our best, to be honest. I would say we have specific people responsible for specific languages, also like internally. I am, for instance, responsible for Italian, so I try to make
So you do some language work somehow, maybe from that perspective, but you still do some language work.
Yes,
you also
I would
have the
say
experience
more from a management perspective and also like strategy perspective. Then it would be impossible for me to also take care of the language part. Someone takes care of it, but yeah, we have specific people we can reach out to if we need some consultancy.
They're like
to
some quality
languages.
Managers, right?
Yes,
I suppose.
Yes. We That's also have country role. Managers for specific countries, so it's always good to have these people who can help us when we have specific needs. It's really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been a country manager too, so that's fun.
Nice. That's good.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
Yeah, that's definitely the kind of thing that interests me the most, because I guess I love when you have a super direct relationship with the public. I guess it's like it's localization is where you really feel like your work immediately has an impact because of the name of a button or, you know, a link that you need to use or something like that. So I guess I really, really enjoy this immediate and super impactful way of working with content. So I guess it's one of my favorite things. And I've I guess my first few big projects were already in localization when I was in California, and therefore the shift and also my interest in terminology, I guess, makes it more obvious, right?
Yeah, so, that's great. We also have like different metrics that actually help us understand if a language performs better to another one. Also, if, for instance, just like a banner performs better to another one. So we can also try with different sizes of communication. And it's always good to know what actually works for our targets.
So you also have a close relationship with the marketing department, right? So that is insane. I've been in that position too. In California, like I say, I did everything in California, like all sorts of jobs, right? So I did work at a marketing department, and it was also like that, right? So we experimented a lot with banners and things like that just to see what happened. And I was responsible also for Google ads and things like that. So it was...
That's a lot of work. It was super interesting.
Yeah, it's super interesting. I guess it's because of that, because of the impact that you see immediately right there, right? What's happening, the click rate and all of that. So I guess you have to have some knowledge on those concepts too, right?
Yes.
So what is... I've never asked this one, but let's go.
Let's go.
A typical day in your life with all of that stuff going on, because I know that us language people, we're always working, because sometimes we don't feel like we're working. So I guess we're always working. It's kind of hard to just switch off the button, because it's everywhere, right? So everywhere you look, you're watching a movie, you're thinking about language. You're going somewhere, you're thinking about language. You see a translation, you think about, you know, it's constantly there. So it's always there. So how is your day, given the fact that you live in a foreign country and all of that? So from the professional, the social, the cultural, how is your usual day?
So I would say in terms of professional life, so the company is Germany. It's German. So we have a lot of people from Germany, of course, and then we have a lot of international people. I would say right now, I think it's like 50-50, so 50 from Germany and 50 from other countries. But it was really hard, of course, when you join a company, especially in e-com, many people are from Germany. So I'm from Southern Europe. So of course,
Style.
I'd say it's different. Yeah, it's different. It's different. It takes a lot of time, I would say, to get used to it. Also in terms of communication, in terms of working together, it's completely different. I was not used to it. But then you get used to it, just like everything else. And I would say it's really good right now. We have these diverse teams. Every day is an opportunity to get to know new people. It's super, super interesting. But this is like the professional life, because of course you're at Puma, it's a huge environment, you can do many other things outside the work, in the company, inside the company, so it's different. When you're in Germany, in your city, of course it's different, because I don't speak German, but of course everyone else does, so it's kind of a challenge for me, to be honest. Because I don't know, especially difficult when you have to deal with bureaucratic things, or when you have to do very specific things and you cannot use English, because many people speak English, but also other people don't. And when you do bureaucratic things in Germany, they say like, no, you cannot speak English, you have to speak German, because you have to be able to speak German, and we cannot help you if you don't speak the language. And this is maybe because I'm in Nuremberg, so maybe it's because it's smaller than other German cities. But yeah, I've faced many challenges in this 1 year and a half that I've been here, but it's a constant growth, I would say. I'm also trying to learn German as an additional language, so let's see if this works out. But yeah, I would say it's interesting. I would recommend everyone to go and live in another country. To not be afraid to do it.
So do you like leave the office at a regular hour that you can still and do other things? Or do you have like a big group of friends, or do you have like the Italian community around you, or is it not like that at all?
There's an Italian community, yes. A huge, actually, Italian community. There are a lot of Italians here. That's great. And then, of course, I also have my friends, mainly from Puma. But also other people that I got to know in the city, and it's great. Yeah, when I log out from work, I do my things, of course, things that I like. A good thing is that there are a lot of opportunities in terms of like creative experience, I've noticed, especially in this city. You can do many things. You can do workshops, you can do pottery classes, you can do sports stuff. It's really great. Things that I've never had like in different city that I've lived in. So it's really good to see that here they have this kind of experiences that I can do.
So you've been there for a year and a half. So do you think you're just keep on going because there's a lot to learn, a lot to evolve, or are you thinking that sometime soon you will have some sort of a detour and you'll go either to another company, to another city, leave Germany? So what's your plan for the next year or so?
I'm not really thinking about the future, to be honest. For now, I'm happy where I am, and yeah, as I said, it's a really great experience. And if you're able to learn something every day and train your mind, I think it's the best option you can have in life. And then yeah, I'm also, as I said, very spontaneous, so I never know. Maybe things can change next month, in a year, I don't know, but for now, I'm happy where I am,
Yeah, I
so
always say
that's good.
if you're, younger than 35 or so, you should change jobs every 2 years or so. That's my
Okay,
theory.
I have 6 months left, and then I would be like, Rita
Something like
told me to
that.
change my job.
No, but I mean, it depends also. There's companies that give you a lot of chances for growth. And what I say
Yes.
is doing exactly the same thing for a whole 2 years when you're 27, 29, something like that. I think it's more than enough because you learn a lot. You just soak in a lot of information and you can take it somewhere else and make it better or bigger or apply it in some other way. So I
That's true.
always like having people who have a bit of a, and I didn't know that you were. That you had such a strong background as far as language work itself, right? I
Yeah.
thought you went through that in a really superficial way, but I guess not. So that's great. So that you're my kind, right?
Yes.
We love looking at it from all the possible perspectives, and that's how it makes sense, really, because
Yes.
everything helps everything. Like I always say, you're a better project manager if you have worked in the activity itself. You're a better freelancer if you know how the industry works. You're a better vendor manager like me for years and years if you've been already through stages of other very different jobs in the industry that allow you to just see all the possible perspectives. So that's my
Yes.
thing. So I thank you very much, Fabrizio, for being
Thank you.
here because it's been amazing. It's amazing that people work at companies and that they embrace their jobs and that they do things that they really like and can talk about with a lot of knowledge, because just being at a company and doing what you're told to do and not venturing out of your own walls, it's not just the way I fly. And it's good
Yes.
to know that there are other people who also enjoy the experience of working at something that is really relevant and will have a direct impact not only in the company but in this case in your customers and people who will have the experience of working or being a client for you guys. So thank you so much, and we'll catch up one of these days. So thank you
Yes.
so much for being here and enjoy your time in the beautiful Germany.
Well, thanks to you. It's been great and looking forward to working together soon. And
Ooh,
yeah, talk
let's
to you
do
soon.
it. Okay,
Yeah,
thank you so
thank
much.
you
See you
so
soon.
much.
Bye.
Yes.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye-bye.